feel welcome to phone Krannert Center at 217-333-6280 or visit krannertcenter.com for event, ticketing, or additional information. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Scott Nance, a member of ADAPT, a group of committed and fearless advocates who work across the country. The U.S. House of Representatives, but first the news. The U.S. House of Representatives voted overwhelmingly last week to approve the Food and Drug Amendments Act, a bill reauthorizing programs at the Food and Drug Administration. Inside the legislation is a provision that would end the use of what are known as electrical stimulation devices that utilize electrodes attached to the skin to condition people not to engage in self-injurious or aggressive behavior. The devices are believed to be used currently at only one facility in the U.S., the Judge Rottenberg Educational Center in Canton, Massachusetts, which houses children and adults with developmental disabilities and some with behavioral and emotional problems. Advocates have worked for years to eliminate those devices. In 2020, the FDA banned the devices after determining that they caused, quote, an unreasonable and substantial risk of illness or injury, end quote. The agency said there was evidence of psychological and physical risk, including burns, tissue damage, worsening underlying symptoms, depression, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress disorder. But the Rottenberg Center sued, and last summer, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. District Circuit found that the FDA had overstepped its authority, and the court overturned the regulation. The legislation now goes to the Senate, where advocates say they are hopeful that the provision banning electrical stimulation devices will be included. States will get extra time to spend billions of dollars given to shore up the Medicaid home and community-based service system after it took longer than expected for the money to be given. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is giving states one more year to use funds that were made available as part of the American Rescue Plan, the $1.9 trillion pandemic relief package that was signed in 2021. The funds were intended to alleviate pressures on the nation's disability services system that were worsened by the pandemic, mainly in the ongoing workforce crisis. The legislation included a 10% increase in the federal government's share of spending on home and community-based services between April 2021 and March of 2022. States were flexible in how the federal funds could be used, but the money had to go towards services that were not available before April 2021. States have created plans to use the money to reduce or eliminate their waiting lists for home and community-based services, to raise wages for direct support professionals, and improve employment opportunities for people with disabilities, among other initiatives. CMS had already extended the time that states had to spend the money until March 2024, but many states waited longer than anticipated for CMS to approve their plans and gain access to the extra money, prompting concerns that there would not be enough time to spend all of it. Now CMS is pushing back the deadline to March 31st of 2025. The adjustment comes as home and community-based service providers struggle to maintain staffing and keep group homes, day programs, Systems and other programs in operation. Lydia Dawson is the Director of Policy at the American Network of Community Options and Resources, or ANCOR, which represent disability service providers across the nation. According to Dawson, quote, allowing additional time for states to spend funds is crucially important for states that have workforce initiatives underway and risk loss of American Rescue Plan Act funding without it, end quote. And finally, a group of U.S. senators are asking the Government Accountability Office, or GAO, to study barriers facing Americans with disabilities in accessing medical treatment, services, or equipment. The letter sent last month to the head of the GAO was signed by U.S. Senators Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, Patty Murray of Washington, Bob Casey of Pennsylvania, Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, and Sherrod Brown of Ohio. In the letter, the senators wrote, quote, we write to request that the Government Accountability Office conduct a study on barriers people with disabilities experience in accessing health care, including reproductive health care in the United States. Even though discrimination based on disability is prohibited by law, people with disabilities continue to face issues with accessibility when it comes to getting the health care they need, when they need it. The lack of accessible health care contributes to and exacerbates health disparities experienced by people with disabilities, end quote. The senator said that people with disabilities often must deal with inaccessible exam tables, scales, and other medical equipment. Also, they have trouble accessing interpreters, or they are not given an opportunity to make decisions using supported decision making. The situation has been aggravated by the COVID-19 pandemic, as some people with disabilities have been denied care when the overwhelmed healthcare systems have implemented crisis standards of care. They also say that issues continue despite strong protections of the rights of people with disabilities to access equal care through the Americans with Disabilities Act, Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, and the Affordable Care Act. The senators are asking the GAO to investigate what's known about barriers to health care for people with disabilities, what data the government collects on those barriers, and what oversight efforts are currently in place. The senators also want to know how much training health care providers are receiving about serving people with disabilities, how many individuals with disabilities work in healthcare, and how financial barriers experienced by people with disabilities impact their access to healthcare. Lastly, the GAO is being asked to recommend what more the federal government can do to address these issues. And that's the news for this week. You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today for an interview with Scott Nance, who is an active member of a chapter of ADAPT here in Illinois. And as I said earlier, it's a group of advocates who have done some amazing things in the state and in the country over the years. So glad to have you on the program, Scott.
Oh, thanks for having me, Vicki. Glad to be here.
So why don't we start out by having you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. So my name is Scott Nance, U.S. Army veteran, anti-capitalist, disabled, and pretty frustrated with the way the world treats people with disabilities.
Yeah.
And especially as we break down where disability intersects with other identities, and specifically people of color, queer folk, women, I mean, the list can go immigration. I mean, the list can go on and on and on. But for all people with disabilities who make up approximately 1/5 of the entire population, the struggle just to get our basic dignity and rights is kind of, well, I'll say it this way. I'm grateful for this program. I'm grateful for the listeners who support this program, because just not nearly enough attention is paid to these issues.
Well, that's what we try to do, is bring attention to the issue. So I'm going to have you talk about ADAPT as an organization, but first, how did you get, what made you connect with ADAPT as your method of advocacy?
Sure. Well, it's going to be tough to make it short. I'll try very hard.
Yeah, it's okay. We got the rest of the half hour, so we're good.
Well, I'm the oldest of three children.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother, who is the youngest of the three of us, died in 2007. And my brother, Devin, was someone with developmental disabilities, growth disabilities, cerebral palsy, speech disabilities. And he loved life. He loved to work at Target. He loved to throw a ball around. And he just loved. He was a peace and love kind of guy. And when he died in 2007, because there was no one there to help him get to the bathroom, because it was just so difficult to find a personal attendant, and that ruined me.
No,
that ship absolutely wrecked me for a couple of years. That was 2007. So by 2009, I still had this friend who's an alum of the University of Illinois, Mike Quach. And I actually met him down there at campus when I was going to school down there. And he hired me as his personal attendant, worked for him, developed a friendship. And he knew my brother, too. Mike is really the guy at the center of the Venn diagram that is my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't ready to go back into attendance services. I'd worked for my brother. I'd worked for Mike. I'd worked for a handful of other folks. And I just wasn't in the right space to go back to doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike knew that, and he loved me so much. He continues to love me so much that he would continue to check on me, invite me out to things. So he invited me to a power soccer match up in Chicago, where I met this guy named Larry Biondi. And
good guy. Miss him.
I'm sorry, say again?
I said, Larry's a good guy. We miss him.
Yes. Wonderful. So this program knows who Larry is. Yeah. So Larry was the one who introduced me to ADAPT. And it was in April 2009 where he asked me to be his personal attendant on this trip to Washington, D.C. I kind of had an idea of what ADAPT was, but you don't really get to fully understand it until you bear witness.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to bear witness first thing Monday morning. It's all very secret. Don't know where you're going. You just have to trust the leadership. And we're marching in the street, single file, super organized, super energized. And we end up in front of the newly elected Obama White House. And we're protesting in front of the Obama White House. I forget what the issue was at the time. I think the demands were almost certainly something to do with attendance services and how states spend.
There are so many issues to choose from. Still are.
Yeah. And I didn't get arrested right away. I eased myself into it. But eventually I started getting arrested. I started assuming or being asked to assume leadership positions. And it coincided nicely with my being hired at a Center for Independent Living in Chicago called Access Living.
Mm-hmm.
And that saved my life. I mean, Larry, Mike and Larry, they saved my life. Because
mm-hmm.
I was just not a very pleasant person to be around. And while I wasn't diagnosed, because I couldn't afford, I was unemployed at the time, so I couldn't even afford health insurance to get diagnosed, but I'm pretty sure I was depressed
mm-hmm.
and like really down. And I don't know where I'd be
yeah.
if it weren't for Mike and Larry inviting me to ADAPT.
Well, and it sounds like, and your brother Devin played a role too, for sure. It was something that came from your heart.
Yeah, well, I want to respond to that, and I want to respond to it by saying, yes, my brother plays a role in this, and he's dead.
Yeah.
Like, there's no bringing him back. So for myself, what I like to, what I prefer to think of it as is, like, I'm doing this for the living. I'm not even doing this for Larry anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He's dead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to be blasé about it. Just fact, these are folks who are no longer with us. I mourn them, but I fight for the living. I think it was Mother Jones said something about that. And I embrace that wholeheartedly. And the other thing that ADAPT did for me was, growing up, it was all very subconscious. I didn't understand fully or at all why I had these feelings, but I was an angry kid. I was angry and bitter at the world for, up until my brother died, where I hated the world. It turned from like just not liking it to outright hating it
mm-hmm.
because how could the people living in this world create a situation where people like my brother could die the way he did?
Yeah.
And what ADAPT helped me do is take that rage that came from a place of hate and turn it into a rage that came from a place of love.
Mm-hmm.
Love for myself, love for the person next to me, love for the community, and love for the person across the street who has no idea what this is like.
Yeah.
But if they're lucky, they'll age into a disability at some point. It's inevitable if they're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll find out.
Yeah. So let's talk, for people who are not at all familiar with ADAPT as an organization. And, you know, when I call ADAPT an organization, I'm using that term rather loosely, because I know that the chapters that exist across the country may be very different from each other. So can you address that, kind of define what ADAPT is and how it works?
Sure. So ADAPT is one part advocacy, sure. And I know that's how you introduced me. And if it's one part advocacy, it's a good 10 parts activism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's born from a minister named Wade Blank, who marched with Reverend King, learned the tenets of nonviolent civil disobedience from Reverend King. And when he witnessed what was going on, what happened at Kent State, when those students were murdered, that really, and then of course the loss of Reverend King, that really rocked him.
Mm-hmm.
It just rocked, talk about like hurt soul. But he moved west to Colorado, where he worked in a youth ward of a nursing facility. And his job was as a director to recruit youth to live in this place. And he just didn't understand what monster he was working for. And he thought he could change it from the inside. And he was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he was fired, he told the kids he'd recruited in there that he'd come back for them. And I don't know how much time elapsed, but he did. He came back. And in 1978, in downtown Denver, at the bus station hub, that was the first action, but it was called the Gang of 19. The 20th kid, Michael, he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
The Gang of 19, and that was Wade, and people from across the country saw that. Now, that was 1978. This was just on the heels of the organizers of the protests, and the more famous one, the 504 protests, famous one in San Francisco. And so other folks started to see this, and other people with disabilities. And so you have someone like a Mike Irvin up here in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
who's seeing this. And Wade and the Gang of 19, I don't think they anticipated that kind of response. But eventually, like you said, 1983, the group formally became ADAPT. And the acronym at that time was American Disabled for Public Transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first big issue area. And Mike Irvin went to Denver, I think, or Wade came here. I don't know how it pollinated, but somehow or another, these seeds started to trickle across the country. And for Chicago ADAPT, started in 1984, mm-hmm. and you have lawsuits and coordination with other entities to put pressure to make public transportation more accessible. You have organized events with Justin Dart to figure out what we want in the 1990 passing of the Americans with Disabilities Act. You have a transition into the effort to free our people, and that's the big slogan for us nowadays, to free our people from the bonds of unnecessary institutionalization. And yeah. we argue, and I think most folks who work in SILS, Centers for Independent Living across the country, would also argue, all institutionalization is unnecessary. There is no real reason to keep someone, and I'm going to use the word incarcerated, and mm-hmm. I know that might be, you know, something your listeners would kind of raise an eyebrow to. I think it's apt.
I do too.
And I think it's apt because it's not very scientific, it's not a very large sample size, but of the handful of folks who have confided in me, their shared life experience of surviving incarceration in the criminal justice system and time spent in a nursing facility, all of them said if they had a choice, they'd prefer the prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you there. And I don't know that you know this, but for the last probably 6 or 8 weeks, weekly, we have focused on closure of institutions and how important that is. So this fits right into that mode. I'm glad. And I know that I've worked with a couple of folks who are members of ADAPT who are on the Going Home Coalition. The difference,
that's right.
I think, between most family advocates and folks who are in ADAPT is that the people who do the actions for ADAPT really are willing to risk themselves to do it in a lot of situations. I had a good friend, I don't know if you ever met Lester Pritchard. He's also from Champaign-Urbana, a man with a disability who passed away, oh gosh, I think about 5 years ago now. I remember Lester telling me a story about him wedging his wheelchair in the doorway at the up in Chicago at the state building, and being arrested and dragged out, and people are willing to do whatever it takes. And I think the one thing that ADAPT really has going for them, besides the fact that folks are brave enough to do that kind of stuff, is that it brings attention to the issue that would not otherwise happen.
Well, and thank you for that, Vicki. I totally agree. And one of the things, one of the many quotes that kind of becomes rote for me, but no less relevant, is the famous excerpt from the speech Frederick Douglass gave, and that was, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. And I think what I interpret you saying is ADAPT will ask nicely once. After that, we don't ask nicely anymore. Mm-hmm. We come to your door. We'll come to your church. We'll come and shut it down. And we won't be asking nicely anymore. It will be a demand. So, very intuitive description. I think the other powerful thing, too, Vicki, is it's run by, it's organized by people with disabilities. And Professor Jim Charlton wrote a book that's translated from a proverb or saying it from apartheid South Africa, called Nothing About Us Without Us.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the idea that any decisions that are made about us must include us. So for people with disabilities, when we have professionals, healthcare, education, administration, so forth, legislators making these decisions about our lives without our input is
criminal.
Not in line with what this nation claims are its values. And from the previous segment, Democracy Now, if there was a visitor who had an interview with Jim Charlton and they asked Mr. Charlton, what is the single biggest issue that people with disabilities in the United States are dealing with? You could answer accessible, affordable, integrated housing. It could answer education, and especially higher education. You can answer any number of different things.
Mm-hmm.
All of it
comes
back to
the
question of capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Capitalism is the thing that I don't know when this became bad. I guess probably in the early 1900s or whatever, but Marxist theory is philosophy. It's an attempt to gain a better understanding. So the idea that it's this bad, bad thing, I just marvel at that in the saddest way possible.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm sorry we don't have time to go further than that. Scott, we're just about out of time. So is there a place where people can go? Does ADAPT, does your organization have a website or a Facebook page or something where people can get in touch and learn more about what you do?
Oh, happily. ChicagoADAPT.com.
Mm-hmm.
If you look up Chicago ADAPT, you'll find it. The website, you'll find the Facebook page. You can find stuff on YouTube. If you put in my name and ADAPT, you'll find some fun stuff because it's not all work. We play really hard, too. And Vicki, thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure. Sorry
thank
I took
you.
Up more time than I
You took exactly the right amount of time, Scott. Like I said, I wish I had more of it so we could talk some more, but we'll just have to have you back another time. So thank you so much for joining me today. Scott Nance, advocate and activist for ADAPT. Thank you so much, Scott.
Thank you, Vicki.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.
Hi, welcome.